are part of the Rebel Alliance.
The idea of this podcast is simple: discipleship. We want to bring the gospel message about how to interact with your coworkers, your culture, your friends, everyone around you in a biblical way, which is, in essence, discipleship.
What did Jesus do when he came to this earth? He took the devil's stuff.
The Bible actually teaches that the world is becoming increasingly covered with the knowledge of the glory of God. That should change everything in the mind of a Christian. Instead of thinking about all the ways society is failing, we should think about all the ways society must be, as Psalm 110:1 tells us, put underneath the feet of Jesus in victory.
The Rebel Podcast.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Welcome back to the Rebel Podcast for cultural engagement. P Nate, Elder P, Mini Garage Mahal, and a live studio audience today, my friend.
We are moving
up in the world.
Now, they are just, I shouldn't say just, but it is my kids who are in studio with us today. So we want to introduce you to them. They're happy to be here. So why don't you guys introduce yourself one at a time?
Hi, my name is Quinn, and welcome to the Rebel Podcast. I'm glad you're here.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Judah. We will be honored if you would join us.
Hi, my name's Hoppa, and I wish there were snacks in here.
Good job, guys. You guys did great. So those are my little three of my kiddos. The other one's too young to talk into a mic, but we're happy that they get to be here.
Do you ever call them minions?
Like they're minions, your minions? No, that's what you call the youth at the
I
church.
I do call the youth
yeah,
the minions.
I call them kiddos, kidlets, and saplings. Yeah,
saplings. Fruit of your loins. You ever
like those? I haven't gotten that gross yet. Although sometimes when I'm being affectionate with my wife and one of the kids says "ooh," our favorite line is "this is the magic that made you," and then they get all grossed out by that. So I imagine that'll last well into their teenage years.
I remember when I was looking at houses. One of the real estate agents like was taking us through the thing, and there's like got to the master bedroom, and there's this guy Mike, and he just looked. He's like, "That's the master bedroom where the magic happens." And I was just like, "I'm with my mother-in-law.
This is weird.
This is awkward.
That's creepy." All right, so we are the Rebels. We are part of the Fight Laugh Feast Network. We are associated with the Ezra Institute, and this is the podcast for cultural engagement. Lots of stuff going on that we just kind of wanted to share a little bit about. First of all, like we are literally at the time of this recording, we're about to get on a plane and go to Taylor, Texas for the Right Response Ministries Conference. And what we would say is that if you are there, come and say hi to us. We will likely be around the Ezra Institute booth. Dr. Joe Boot is there. We are his entourage. So we'll be hanging out at the book table and I'll be doing a pitch for Ezra and stuff like that.
If we're his entourage, you would be his wingman and I would be his muscle? Is that how that works?
I would be both the wingman and the muscle. I don't know what you
I'm the Klingon guy.
So just a couple things that we kind of wanted to make everybody aware of. Just some things coming up with the Ezra Institute. First and foremost, we have training programs that go on throughout the year. And a couple of things that we have. Number one, we have our Cultural Leadership Academy. And what this is for is cultural leaders aged 19 to 29. And the idea here is that whatever vocation you are going into. So first of all, the Cultural Leadership Academy is July 5th through the 8th in Huntsville, Alabama. You can find this stuff on our website under the Training Programs tab. But Cultural Leadership Academy specifically, we have Youth Worldview Academy. We've talked about those in previous episodes. I just want to focus in on the Cultural Leadership Academy. The idea here is that emerging leaders in whatever vocation you're going into, you might be going into ministry, but you might be going into law, you might be going into medicine, you might be going into politics, you might be going into education, you might be an entrepreneur. Whatever the thing is we want to train you how to think Christianly in that particular sphere, in that particular vocation. The Cultural Leadership Academy is for emerging cultural leaders to get worldview training that is specific, Christian philosophy, Christian worldview, apologetics, all that kind of stuff, but then also specific enough going into their particular sphere. So what does the Word of God and what does God's law have to say about that particular vocation? So I just encourage you, if that sounds interesting to you, if you are an emerging cultural leader, think about joining us for the Cultural Leadership Academy this year, July 5th through the 8th.
I wish there was things like that as well done as what Ezra does when I was that age.
Yeah.
Because like how many times, and we don't have to say names, but how many times have you had a conversation in a counseling session even just based on what we've preached or taught on the podcast from the pulpit or whatever. And somebody said, I wish I would have known that when I was 21, 22, totally. Just to avoid so many things. And like, that's what these conferences are great at. I know it's a sacrifice to give up work, to give up time away, but the foundations you lay when you're 18 to 25 will set your life up for success in many ways, but even just your faith set up in a right way to be totally. Able to combat the lies of the world around you, right?
Yeah, totally. So what we wanted to do, it's a bit of an odd episode today for a number of reasons. Number one, one of the things that Chris and I talked about, if you follow us anywhere, by the way, if you follow us on Twitter, if you follow us on Facebook, we're just kind of trying to re-engage a lot on social media. We've been pumping out these podcasts through seasons of relative consistency for 7 years. And the social media engagement is waned and weaned, and sometimes it's up and sometimes it's down. So we've just kind of relaunched with a little bit of a rebranding, trying to bring us in line with the Ezra Institute and grow that partnership. By the way, if you listen to us and you're listening to us on our own feed, we would encourage you, if you listen to us, the best place to listen to us is on the Fight Left Feast Pub app. That is the best place. But if you subscribe to the Rebel Podcast on a podcast catcher like Podbean or Apple Podcasts or whatever, we are going to be merging with the Ezra feed. So we're just giving everybody the warning that that is eventually going to happen, and you'll have to subscribe to the Ezra feed in order to get us, just so that we can keep costs down and merge the things anyway. We just kind of relaunched, facelift to the branding and all that kind of stuff. We're going to try to get, you know, re-engage on social media a little bit. But one of the things that we would encourage you to do is go on, find us on social media if you haven't already, share us with somebody that hasn't heard us before. But one of the things that we were talking about as we were thinking through all this stuff is like, because it is kind of neat, like everybody has a podcast now, like that is true.
Yeah.
But like, we've been doing this for over 7 years. We were podcasting before it was that cool.
Yeah, we were podcasting when people didn't know what a podcast was.
Yeah, exactly. So we've been at it a long time, and my point in saying that is sort of like, we went through the highs and lows of getting interviews and guests every week to just Chris and I talking, and it's gone through the ups and downs of like being really just focused on our church family, specifically through COVID because of the boom in our church. We wanted to focus it on our church family and went through a lot of the things that we wanted to talk to our people about it and all that. But we're just at a point now where it's like, okay, now we're rethinking about how this can be a complement to the Ezra podcast, how we can kind of grow this thing within the Fight Laugh Feast network, how we can link arms with some other media outlets that are happening here in Canada of like-minded Christians and all that kind of stuff. So as we think through that stuff, we're kind of like, there's probably a lot of people who listen to us who haven't been listening for 7 years. And so we're going to actually kind of re-go through some of the stuff that we talked about. And we're going to kind of get through some of the stuff that made us who we are and kind of put us on the map. And so one of the things in this sort of transition episode that I wanted to talk about is, we talk about this being a podcast that helps equip all Christians to engage culture with a biblical worldview. So one of the things that we wanted to do today, just because we had some tech issues earlier in the week and we had some recordings not work out and stuff. So we just kind of wanted to have an easy episode.
Yeah. And those recordings that you'll never hear were gold.
Yeah, they were just 10 out of 10.
So good.
Like, yeah. Just so gold. Good. I was so saying, good, we're not saying it again.
I was saying brilliant stuff. Like,
but I thought what we would do today is we would actually just pull up Twitter, and we're just going to kind of go through what's trending on Twitter. And part of the reason we do this is not just because we're lazy. Although I will say, obviously, there's a side of things here where we're trying to get a recording out before we go to Texas. But also, like, as a podcast that's meant to engage culture with a biblical worldview, what's trending on Twitter matters. Like, how you think about what's trending on Twitter matters. The news that you'll find there and all that kind of stuff is important. So we're going to talk about what's trending on Twitter. Anything you wanted to add to that there?
Yeah, do they still call it Twitter now that it's the X
thing?
No,
it's X. It's like, X. I'm revealing my age.
Like, so I didn't know.
Yeah.
Twitter's not one that I'm on. It's not one of my social media things. So let's do it. And the best part about this is we have no idea what we're about to talk about.
We have no idea. Okay, so first thing that is trending on Twitter in Canada is hashtag Pink Shirt Day.
Of course it's going to be something like that. What's the significance of the pink shirts? Is that the...
So hashtag Pink feminism? Shirt Day is... Pink Shirt Day is Pink Shirt Anti-Bullying Day is February 22nd, 2023. Use hashtag Pink Shirt Day or share photos to info@pinkshirtday.com.
Okay, first thing I'm going to say, if you want to stop bullying, don't put everybody in pink shirts. But like, can I just be a little controversial? Like, people have probably heard this. Are. I was heavily bullied when I was in public school. Now, I wouldn't say it was always good, but like, there are certain aspects that I think our culture needs to bring back the bully. And what I mean by that is, like, I think we have a generation now that have, generally speaking, not been bullied.
Yeah, I would agree
and
with that.
This is the generation that's crying about, you must use my pronouns. You must call me a dog when I am clearly a human. You must do all these things. I realize it's a lot of it's they're delusional, but part of the reason is that that stuff gets weeded out.
Yeah.
When you say that to a kid in grade five and he looks at you and slaps you, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or he punches you. How many lippy people have we encountered in our lives where you're like, and I know me and you have made this comment before. It's like, that guy just literally needed to go to a school at one point to get somebody to be like, that's the line you can't cross.
Yeah.
And those are the things that bullies teach you. And I'm not saying it's a good thing that kids are bullied or anything like that, but there is that social engagement that needs to happen for people to realize there are lines and there are consequences for the way you run your mouth and the way you do these things. And that's what bullies do, right? And we see this on a global scale too. Like, there are things that you can do to other countries. And if you cross those lines, you get invaded or you get bombed. And let's bully on a big scale. And I'm not saying go out and be a bully or get your kids to be bullies, but like there is a deficiency in our culture because we've taken such a hard stand against bullies.
And what I would say is, like, not all bullies are created equal, right? And I think that as Christians, we ought to be against bullying in its broad sense, right?
Yes.
So like, you alluded to this, so I can talk about it since you brought it up. It was like, you were bullied as a kid, right? And like, there's significant, I don't wanna say trauma, because I hate those triggering words, you know what I mean? You had a rough childhood because of that.
Yes.
And, you know, there was violence and there was, you know, fear and all kinds of stuff that you had to go through. And I would say that as Christians, we ought not to want to see that sort of thing, right? The sort of bullying that's harassment and all that kind of stuff. But the problem now is that, remember when we were kids, it used to, remember the phrase, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me?
Yes.
Right? You'll read things now that say, oh, now we know that words cut deeper than sticks and stones. It's like, if that's true, you've never had a rock thrown at your head, right? And this is part of the problem. So like, we've cut down on the quote unquote bullying so much that there's not that sort of bullying. And now the sensitivity to things is such that people get called a name and they think that there's trauma for their life. And I would just say, like, there is a sort of toughening up that is supposed to happen in adolescence. Now, of course, as I'm a parent with, you guys just heard some of my young kids. Like, I don't want them to be bullied. I don't want them to be mistreated. I don't want them to be punched in the face. But I do want my son Judah to learn the lesson that when he says dumb stuff, he's going to be held accountable for that. And I think peers are actually good for helping with that kind of thing. So I'm not saying that we're advocating for bullying. What I am saying is that there was a place for the bully on the playground. And part of it was teaching people that they can't say anything that they want to. They can't just say stupid stuff, and that they're going to be held accountable for the things that they do say. So I agree with you. I think that's...
It's funny, sticks and stones can't break my bones, but I've never seen anybody break under torture of being name called. Like, it's like, you just look stupid.
Yeah. That's not how they extract intel from the spies of foreign nations, is by like calling them pansies and sissies and stuff. Yeah.
I find it funny because it's like, again, we're not pro-bully in the sense that I want your kids to go out and be bullies, but it is how we get to this, even in evangelicalism, where we get to this point where the Moscow mood, which we've talked about before, is a thing, because it's like the mood that they're getting accused of is tone.
Right.
Because they're just a little bit more abrasive than you are comfortable with. And it's like, and that is all stems from the fact that we think that everybody has to speak to us the way our grandmother speaks to us. You know what I mean? And like, truthfully, if everybody spoke to, like, my grandma spoke to me very sharply and I loved her. We raise secure people because it no longer becomes about what other people think about us. It's more our own identity, our own worth. And because it matters what God thinks about us and what we think about ourselves, right?
Like, and you use the word security. I think that's a good one. I remember, and I've told you this before, as a guy who I feel like I'm now mentoring and trying to teach in the ways of ministry, so to speak. But like, the guy who mentored me in ministry, one of the first things he said to me is, there's too many insecure men in ministry. Don't be one of them. Insecurity leads to bad leadership. Insecurity leads to all kinds of things. Like, we ought to be secure enough that like somebody disliking us, somebody disagreeing with us, somebody saying something about us ought not to unravel us. And right now, I think this is part of the problem. We see a culture full of people who, when something doesn't go their way, they unravel. I'll use a sort of cultural phenomenon as something that, like, when Donald Trump won the election, this is why there was such cultural upheaval, is because what you had is a university culture. We've talked about this many times. You have a university and academic culture that is far left, radically left, who all, and I talked to some of these young people. I talked to my own siblings about this, and both my siblings at the time worked for a media outlet, a social media like platform. And I remember when Donald Trump won the election, there was like a universal meltdown with the left. And a lot of it had to do with, you have a bunch of university aged and young 20 somethings who collectively realized that life doesn't always work out the way you want it to at one time together. And then the cultural just shriveling, unraveling that happened because of that. It was a giant 4-year hissy fit is what it was. And it happened because we've become such a soft culture that when things don't go our way, we don't know how to live.
Yeah, exactly.
So
do you remember a few years back when there was that day of the big internet provider in Canada went down? So there was no internet for anybody for an entire day.
Yeah, that's right.
And the next day, what was trending on Twitter that day was reparations. Like they wanting the internet company to give them money back.
Are you serious?
And it was like, yeah, like, that was like the
number
one thing.
They lost a day?
And it was like, so like the company, I don't know if we can say the name, but they sent out an email being like, we're going to take 2 days off of everybody's bill this month. And it's like, and it was like that idea of like liberal tears drive our culture. And it's like, guys, it's a service that you pay for. Yes, I understand it's frustrating. It's inconvenient, but like, things don't work out the way they want. I remember there's a funny story. I don't know if this is even funny. I went to get an ice cream cone one time when I was a kid, and I rode my like little 10-speed bike or whatever, which I think was a girl's bike, to be honest with you, but probably why I was bullied, holding this ice cream, and it fell off my cone and fell to the ground. And like, obviously I'm crying because I lost my ice cream. And I remember going home and going to my grandma, like, Grandma, my ice cream fell and I don't have any rest. And she was like, well, guess you'll learn not to ride your bike, eh? And it was just like, in today's culture, if that same thing happened, it'd be like, let me not only buy you a new ice cream cone, let me go to the store and blame them for not stacking it correctly. And
yeah,
it's like, and it's this idea of like, sometimes things just don't go well. What's funny is like, we're not setting anybody up for success like in the future, because you know what your boss at your work doesn't care about? Your excuse for being 5 minutes late for work.
Right.
He doesn't care. There's literally like, we pay you to be here, be here. So you're not helping anybody by not setting these guidelines. And in fact, that's why I hate participation medals. There are winners and there are losers in life. Choose to be on which side you want.
Okay, this next thing that's trending on Twitter probably isn't like, I don't know how much we'll talk about this, but maybe you got more opinions on it than I do, is Bitcoin.
Oh man, I know nothing about Bitcoin.
I don't know anything about Bitcoin either.
Digital currency to me should go away.
Yeah, so okay, I do actually have an opinion. I just don't think I know a whole lot, right? So like, there's going to be some listener of ours who's like big into Bitcoin, big into, you know, cryptocurrencies, and we have friends who are literally going to text me.
We both know a guy, so we shouldn't say his name, who at one time owned 1% of all the Bitcoin. We would recognize him, but it's not like we would know him to like call him on the phone or anything. But we know a guy who at one time, because he's like a multi-millionaire, who at one time owned, like, this is like 15 years ago maybe when it came out or whatever, he sold a ton of it off.
Interesting.
He owned like a percentage of all of it.
So here's my thing, like, and I'm sure there's going to be people who are far more educated on this stuff than I am. Here's what I would say. If you are looking for financial advice, go and talk to Jonathan Wellum from Rock Solid Financial Investments. Good Christian guy. He does a lot of the economics teaching for the Ezra Institute. Phenomenal. There's also Jonathan Lewis is a great guy. He recently moved down to Charleston, but he's a Canadian expert as well. Financial whiz. So there are good Christian guys who are better at this stuff than I am. But here's what I would say. Justin Trudeau froze the bank accounts of all Canadians who donated anything to the GoFundMe for the truckers during the trucker convoy here in Canada. Our prime minister, I would say, broke the law in order to freeze the bank accounts because he declared the truckers a terrorist organization. It was unjust. It looks like he's going to get in trouble for that, thankfully. But it's taken some years for him to get called on that. And if it's anything like any of his other ethical grievances, it's not going to go anywhere. It's going to slip off him like Teflon. But when I just look at that, I think when you invest in digital things, right? Ethereal things that aren't real, I get that there's an internal economy that's created with the whole thing. I get all that. I think it's dangerous. I just think it's dangerous when you are not investing in something physical and tangible. I would always advise to invest in things that are physical and tangible, whether that's land, whether that's gold, whether that's whatever, like things that have stood the test of time.
That's where I'm at too. Yeah. Like precious metals, precious stones, those things, like, you know, if the internet goes down, you still have the precious metal and you still have the precious stone.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, the government can't come in and freeze your gold. They can make your gold pretend to be worthless.
But it would be temporary. Like, exactly. If the 2,000 years of history that we have since Christ, and if, like, taking in 6,000 years of history, gold has always been valuable and it has always gone up. And though there are, exactly, are blips on the radar.
Do you personally own any gold?
We do.
I have a little. I don't have a ton. A little. Like, I all of a sudden realize now I'm like on a podcast talking about how much gold we have.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable with that that conversation. Where I also do you have keep a bunker. It?
I don't know very much about the Bitcoin, so like it feels unsecure. You know what I mean? And it feels very like
And so ethereal, I'm sure we're going to get some. That's interesting that we talked about it that long. But like, and to me, I guess what I would say is I'm not well educated in this stuff. So take that with a grain of salt. I'm just looking as a guy who, like, I think I'm a generalist. I think I know a little bit about a lot in God's world. And I would say that investing in things that are ethereal and digital and not real is probably not a good idea.
My only advice, again, I'm not an expert financialist or anything, but like, I think it's fine to be into Bitcoin and stuff like that. If, as long as you're not all, your whole game plan is in that, right? Like, diversify, like get land, get property, because you never know when one's going to go away. And how many times have you counseled somebody who, either on the negative side, gambling, and it's like they've gambled all their money, or it's like they've invested poorly and it goes away, because that sometimes happens, right? So like, just practical wisdom. It's kind of like when you lend a friend money, never lend more than you'd be uncomfortable just completely losing.
Yeah.
Don't invest what you couldn't bear to part with, so to speak.
Here's an interesting one in terms of how are we doing for time? How many? All right, we got more trends to talk about. Remember, this is all stuff that's trending in Canada right now, so it might be different in the States for those of you who are listening.
By the time you get this, it'll be all different anyway.
Yeah, that's true. But 92,300 posts. What else is trending on Twitter is Virgil. So I had to click on that to see what it meant. I'm interested in this because when I clicked on the name, what do you think it's talking about?
Well, as I'm a soccer fan, so I'm going to say Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah, he died. Just kidding. You guys should have seen Chris's face. I'm so sorry. Oh, dude, I just wanted to see. Oh, that was enjoyable for me. You guys cannot appreciate
That's terrible.
Especially since it is actually somebody who died, so I shouldn't be making fun of. I'm going to show you a picture. This isn't good for anybody else on radio, but Virgil, who is a professional WWE wrestler. He was part of NWO. He's like a...
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Interestingly, he did die. He passed away. He's relatively old, right? So he... there's a picture of him for Pooty, not for everybody else who's listening.
But, yeah, I remember him.
Anyway, he just passed away. I have nothing to say about wrestling, although I did watch WCW when NWO was at its height.
One of the things, this isn't great radio because nobody cares, but one of the things we actually bonded over, if you remember, was our preference of WCW over the WWF or WWE.
Like, yeah, now WWE, I never called that though, but I agree. Like WCW during the day with like Goldberg and like Sting, shamefully,
I was so into the New World Order to the point where I'm actually upset that the phrases
like
now
OG New World Order or like Wolfpack.
Well, the Wolfpack was amazing. I had a Wolfpack t-shirt.
There you go.
I went on a mission trip with that shirt.
Like, right, I want somebody in the comment section who's like digging what we're throwing down right now. I want somebody to talk about the New World Order, Wolfpack. Like let's talk some old school wrestling.
Netflix is actually, I think in September, bringing all of the like Attitude Era, which was like the early 90s, late 90s, like Stone Cold and all those guys.
Oh, interesting.
All the episodes will be on there so you can watch them in order again. And I'm like, I'm totally doing that.
Fair enough. So
guilty pleasure.
My one thing to say about Virgil is not about the wrestler at all, but interestingly, I was just at Trinity Bible Chapel on Saturday, and I was talking about Christian piety to a group of men, and I was talking about the Aeneid, and Virgil is the author of the Aeneid. So when I see Virgil, I'm just like, oh, the Aeneid. Why is that trending on Twitter? Well, of course, it's not trending on Twitter. Nobody on Twitter is talking about the Aeneid, unfortunately.
That's the difference between Nate's brain and my brain. Yeah. I go to soccer. He goes through the Aeneid.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so Kate Middleton, British royal family. Let's not talk about that. This is an interesting one, though. Actually, there's 756. These must not be in order as I'm going down this thing. Apparently, I don't know how to work X. 765,000 posts. Aaron Bushnell. Okay, so Aaron Bushnell. Have you heard this news story? Do you know who I'm talking about?
No, I don't know.
Okay, so this is a U.S. pilot who went to the Israeli embassy.
Oh, okay, I think I do know
And lit himself on fire in an apparent protest for the whole Gaza thing. And so apparently he lit himself on fire and yelled Free Palestine as he lit himself on fire. And he did end up dying of his wounds. At this point, the U.S. military has just come out with a public statement saying that it was a tragic event, but they don't go into any details. But apparently what he said is, I'm just pulling up a news article here. He said, "I will no longer be complicit in genocide." He did this on Twitch. So he obviously like set his phone up and put it on Twitch or whatever. So he says, "I will no longer be complicit in genocide," set himself on fire outside the Israeli embassy screaming Free Palestine, according to a video that was put up on Reuters. So here's the official: "We express our heartfelt condolences and full solidarity with the family and friends of American pilot Aaron Bushnell, who immortalized his name as a defender of human values and the plight of Palestinian people who are oppressed by American administration and its unjust policies." Oh, that was put out by Hamas. There you go. On a Telegram messenger. So interesting. So that's one thing. Any thoughts on that, first of all, before I give you another little interesting tidbit?
My first thought is like, what a mockery of martyrdom.
Yeah. You
know, like, and it's like, yes, so like somebody 100%. Who's dying for a cause that's ethereal or not even temporal.
Yeah.
Like, not one person is going to remember Aaron Bushnell's name in terms of like, he's like changing or freeing Palestine by him lighting himself on fire and purposely putting himself to death. Like, did he think he was going to survive? Like, cause like he'll no longer partake in the genocide of Israel, is what he said, or whatever, or Palestinians.
Of Palestine. Yeah.
He's no longer partaking in anything now. Yeah. Like, so like,
And let's be honest, he is in hell. And I'm not saying that just because he was on the wrong side of our political ideologies, but like, there's no indication that this guy is a Christian in any way. Generally speaking, Christians do not take their lives in this way. Like, I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but this is mental illness. There's two ways I want to go with this, okay?
I love it.
Okay, ask me about Shane Claiborne afterwards. And then the other thing I want to talk about is I really do think that activism has reached a point of mental illness, okay? So that's where I want to go after this. So let's talk about this incident, and then let's use this as a springboard, and we'll finish talking just about activism in general, okay? So Shane Claiborne, for any of you who don't know, is a super woke guy who calls himself a Christian. He wrote the book, The Radical Revolution, or something like that. Anyway, so he wrote on Twitter, and I only know this because our boy Joe Boot responded, but he said, "This is Aaron Bushnell, a 25-year-old active duty service member of the U.S. military and a precious child of God." Well, that's interesting because nothing on his social media indicates that he's a Christian in any way. "Last night, he set himself on fire outside an Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. as an act of protest against the genocide in Gaza. Among his last words were, 'Free Palestine.' He died as a result of his injuries. I'm moved by his conviction and his anger, but grieved at the loss of life. My heart goes out to all those who loved him. I wish he was still alive. I pray other soldiers and veterans and more of us in general will find ways to courageously voice our compassion and dissent, but without any more loss of life. We need more soldiers with conscience to raise their voices, but more death will not heal the wounds of war. Let's all do what we can to support soldiers who become conscientious objectors, all those who stand against the war in Gaza, and all those who refuse orders that violate their faith and their conscience." Now, Shane Claiborne is as woke and ridiculous as a sort of Christian voice gets. But there's a couple things I want to point out there because he is not the only one. He just happens to be the low-hanging fruit that I'm seeing here. And because Joe responded to him, it came up in my algorithms. Mm. But it's interesting that he calls this courageous. I would say any act of taking your own life is a coward's way out.
Absolutely.
Right? It is way easier to take your life and be gone than it is to spend your life doing what you think is right. So I disagree with him. I would be on the other side of the conflict here. And don't get me wrong, we've done podcasts on this. The Ezra Institute's done great podcasts on this. So I don't want to pull up the whole thing. I'm generally speaking, Israel has not been without sin in all this. They are doing atrocious things as well. But I would say overall, I am on the side of Israel in this conflict. I'm not talking about that though in either way. What I am saying is that no matter what, taking your life in this cowardly way is the coward's way out. There's nothing courageous about taking your own life. I've known guys, I've seen guys, I've counseled the wives and the children that they leave behind. And generally speaking, when they take their own lives, there's a lot going on. There's all kinds of stuff going on, dark clouds, sin that they can't get over, that they can't overcome. There's financial debt that their family doesn't know about. There's secret porn habits that their family doesn't know about. There's all kinds of stuff like that. And rather than doing the hard work of overcoming those sins and bringing order to the chaos that their life has become because of their own immoral decisions, they choose the coward's way out. This is never, never a brave or a courageous option.
No, it's Piper that says that suicide is the ultimate form of self-love.
That's exactly right.
And because it's like it's completely inward focused.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm 100% with you on the terms of like, this is the coward's way. If he was really serious about like making a stand for suffer court martial, suffer going right. to prison in the States for speaking out against your government's role in the genocide, abandon your post, which I don't like, go AWOL, yeah. whatever. Like if you believe it that far, yeah. there are things you can do to actually yeah. try to fight the fight and keep a voice in the fight. Think of it this way. And again, I'm not trying to make him a martyr, but like, one of the reasons they killed the martyrs was to stop the work they were doing to spread the gospel, to spread the kingdom. But the martyrs weren't burning themselves to further that cause.
Yeah, I agree. I just want to read our boy Joe Boots' reply to this. So he replied to Shane Claiborne. He just said, "Those that know Christ do not commit suicide to make a point about a war that they don't understand. This is a tragedy of radicalization, not martyrdom. Your attempt to make it one is somewhat perverse."
Yeah. Can I ask you a question about this?
Yeah.
I've just been thinking about this in general. We live completely on the other side of the world.
Yep.
What's your stance just in terms of like, or even a Christian stance on nations being involved in the politics of other nations? Like, because like Canada's a sovereign country.
Yep.
Should the U.S. be involved at all in Saudi Arabia? Should they be involved at all in the Middle East conflict? And I understand, like, and I will differentiate this between just war. Like, I think it was right and good for Canada and the States to go to war to fight the Nazis.
Right.
But both sides, I would say, are at fault in this conflict
yep.
to varying degrees. Should we even
same with Russia and Ukraine, right?
Yeah. Should we even be involved?
No, we shouldn't be involved in this. So first of all, let me plug my boy Jacob Rayome over at Trinity Bible Chapel. He's done a series on the Ten Commandments that I think lasted about a year, but he's done a great job. The thing I liked about Jacob's series is like, so he hits thou shall not murder, and then he does a sermon on what murder is. He does a sermon on what murder isn't, right? It's not just killing. Killing isn't what's prohibited. It's murder. So what is murder? What about war then? What about pacifism? Should Christians be pacifists? He did a really good job with each of the Ten Commandments to really flush it out and talk about its implications. But he actually did a whole sermon on just war. And I would highly recommend it. So you can go to Trinity Bible Chapel and look up Jacob Rayome's sermon in the Ten Commandments series under commandment number 6, thou shalt not murder. He talks about just war. And it was a really good sermon. I listened to it and it was actually very phenomenal. So first of all, let me just throw that out as a resource. Then the next thing I would say is that I do agree with just war theory. Like you said, I think that Canada should have gotten involved. The U.S. should have gotten involved in World War II. I think going and fighting the Nazis was absolutely justified given everything that was going on. Absolutely, yes. But we're in Canada. We've sent billions of dollars to Ukraine. Billions of dollars. To a corrupt government, to involve ourselves in a conflict that is more about our prime minister virtue signaling his moral stances than it is about anything else. Like at the end of the day, why do so many people support Ukraine and not Russia? Because they've been told that Putin is bad and because he supports Trump and because this is about right versus left, not about right versus wrong. Ooh, that was good. You should tweet that. Yeah,
tweet that out.
It is the height of arrogance for the Western world to think that we need to be involved in every conflict that's going on around the world. I don't think we need to be at all. And I think this is where like state sovereignty, I think this is where nationhood needs to, like our politicians are elected to take care of our people. Now, being a good neighbor to our neighboring nations means that if there is genocide like there was during World War II going on, that we involve ourselves in making sure that that does not happen. But when you look at something like Palestine and Israel conflict, there is sin on both sides. I think it was right and appropriate for Christians and for nations to be praying for many of the prisoners that got taken in the first attack on Gaza by the Palestinians and all that kind of stuff. But we ought not to be sending troops. This is not our fight. That's my general opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you completely. Yeah. I think the only people we should be sending overseas are missionaries. Amen. If you like, because ultimately, what is needed in this situation is not more troops on one side, more police involved. What's needed to eradicate this problem is the gospel going into those nations. And I realize like Trudeau and Biden don't believe that. No. So like, but we as Christians do believe that. So we should be trying to get our politicians to stop policing other people's countries.
Yeah.
Unless it becomes a point where there's like human rights, like, and like people can argue when that line crosses or whatever. I would say like, generally speaking, we shouldn't be involved in other people's businesses.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's like getting involved in your neighbor's marriage.
Right. And so, and that's actually a really good analogy. So if my neighbor hits his wife, it's my duty to step in and make sure he doesn't hit his wife again. But if they're arguing, my job is not to go over and to settle their dispute, right? Now, again, when people hear us say things like that, they might say, oh, well, there's torture and there's kidnapping, there's all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I agree with that. But there is such a complex geopolitical relationship that's playing itself out right now that it is impossible for nations to get involved without vested interest. And here's all I'll say, okay? Like, even when you think through like Taliban and ISIS and all this kind of stuff, like, I just want people to be aware that both Canada and the US are guilty of this, is like, the terrorists we are fighting today are the terrorists that we armed yesterday.
Yes.
Right? Absolutely. Like for decades now, what ends up happening is our involvement, all it's doing is arming the next group of terrorists. That's an actual fact. And so our involvement has been a long-term source of complexity, suffering, and war in the Middle East, not a source of relief.
We often say this when we consider somebody's life, their walk with Christ, ideas they have, decisions they made, judge it by the fruit. Yeah. We have 60 years now of fruit of what's happened in our policies in the Middle East, our involvement in Eastern Europe, our involvement in those places. Where's the fruit?
Yeah.
Because like at this point, we may have more oil. That might be the case. Like, but
it's so expensive. Nobody can afford it.
But like, but even that, like in Canada, like we can produce all of our own oil. We don't need that. But I mean, like it's
just
this idea of like,
frack the West.
Let us frack the West. Where's the fruit of our thing? Because the fruit that's being produced is hate of the West, hate, violence, death.
Yep.
And a lot of that stems with us in their business. And
100%.
Because you said it, and I thought you said it well, is nobody who lives in outside of that culture understands that culture because you didn't grow up in that culture. So we know a lot about that culture, but we don't know the culture. It's like, how many times have you had a conversation with somebody who knows a lot about theology or a lot about God, but they don't know God? And tons. It's like, there's a huge difference between knowing him and knowing about him. And that's the idea. When we get our noses in other people's business, we might think we know about it, but we don't. We don't understand what it's like to be in that situation.
And here's the thing, is there might be some guys listening to us who are like, I know, I've been following it. Yeah, you're right. Our politicians don't. And this is the problem. Like, they're the ones making these decisions. And so the people involving themselves, here's a generalized statement that I'll say about politics in general, is generally the further you are away from a problem, the less equipped you are to be of help.
Okay.
Right. So this is the problem with the federal government coming in and thinking that they can make decisions for families and local schools and local churches. This is why the lockdowns were so unjust, because you have a blanket decision that's being made from somebody who's up in Ottawa, probably having their own private parties, by the way, who are locking down everybody else. And they have no idea what's going on PEI, what's going on in this small hamlet community in Victoria, BC, or what's going on in Calgary. You know what I mean? And so the further away you are from a problem, the less equipped you are generally to be a part of the solution. And so our politicians are the least equipped people to go and help settle down what's going there. And
I would also add, like, 1 Corinthians talks about the idea, like, you have to have a healthy body so that you're able to bless others.
Yeah.
And so, like,
yeah, that's a
good
point.
Just judge your own country. We have too many problems ourselves to be worried about Ukraine.
Yeah.
We have to become a healthy economy, a healthy country of people who are healthy before we can even think that we have the right to bless other people.
It's like the 40-year-old smoker who has like five different diseases who wants to give a liver transplant to somebody. It's like, you can't, right? Like,
you just can't.
You're just not, you're not going to be able to do that. As a side note, here's, maybe this is a whole other episode because we're kind of coming to the end of our time. I said I wanted to touch on this. So just remind me, there's two things I think that we should talk about, okay?
Okay.
This conversation reminds me of two things. Number one, when does a good thing become an idol? So let's do an episode on that. And the other thing is that I think Joe's tweet said it. He says, this isn't martyrdom, this is radicalization. And it seems to me like modern day activism is a form of mental illness. When you think of like climate alarmism, when you think of sort of the LGBT activist community, when you think about this Free Palestine, Set Yourself on Fire kind of nonsense, activism nowadays, it seems like particularly, I'll say the left's activism, is wicked men like Trudeau and Biden and women like Kamala Harris and Cortez taking advantage of mentally ill young people who will be their activists for them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen the like tomato soup on the paintings in Paris and stuff when those teenagers are doing climate activism and all that kind of stuff. So let's do a whole episode on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Love it.
All right, well, we're off to Texas. I hope you enjoyed this this episode. And
I may not come back from Texas. Like,
I know, it is the promised land. So I don't know if Gabe, if you listened at all, but we're going to Austin. We're flying into Austin. We'll be in Taylor. Tell us where to go for food. Tell us where to go. I think I'm going to see. I don't know if you're going to see. Joe Boot and I are going to see the Alamo on Sunday.
I hope I'm coming.
Yeah, so you guys can come with us. But this is Admin on Air. So let's shut off these microphones and tell everybody we'll see you next time.
Peace, guys.